Himself, all the lights to light his chills, all the doors to open himself, all the lights to light his chills.
There is no spiritual progress in the higher realms if the diet is not definitely and totally based on the vegetarian system. We can only go so far, and that is as far as the fourth realm, by eating any other product other than vegetables. Up to that point, the soul on its own has a brilliance of pale silence. But if we want to go past that point, merely by detaching ourselves to gain self-realization, we can only achieve the brilliance of 12 suns, plus the brilliance of one more sun, giving us the self-realization we need, which is the brilliance of 13 suns. And we can't go beyond that by any other power on our own. In the fourth realm, you can hear? You can't hear me?
No.
What's wrong with this unit? Air conditioning is bothering?
Yeah.
Well, we can turn off the air conditioner.
Oh,
okay. Go beyond the fourth realm if we ever use any type of substance that is not of the vegetarian diet. Not possible. The moment we begin to detach ourselves and get beyond that level by our own ability, we can only gain the brilliance of 13 suns. Right now the soul has the brilliance of 12 suns, and by its own nature, its own ability, its own willpower, it can only achieve the brilliance of 13 suns. And that is as far as ever go on self-realization. For it to go beyond that state, back into the true sun current, which is the other four levels, which is totally ultrasonic, we have to have the help of a master who has the presence of 24 suns. He alone can come down from that realm and pass through the four upper regions and down into four lower regions. And by virtue of his grace, by virtue of his love, he alone can attract us magnetically and pull us through. We can live with the notion that we can go up, back to the source, the invisible, by our own efforts. But it's only up to the fourth realm, and by detaching ourselves through detachment, we can achieve the brilliance of 13 suns. We can't go beyond that. We don't have the power, and we don't have the love to go beyond that. When the Master Jesus said, "No man come unto me, or to the Father, but by me," he was inferring that you can't pass that level. You couldn't go past that level without his love, without his intercession, without his brilliance. This is proof when you go inside. You have to see this for yourself. Hearing it it in conversation or in a satsang or a lecture wouldn't mean anything. The evidence is when you go inside to seek for yourself that you can go past that level. There is no way for you to go past that level. This has to be brought out by grace. It's a big conflict between your conscience and your consciousness to go past that level. Your consciousness will tell you you can do it. But your conscience knows it can't do it. And that's where the great problem is. And that is where the diet problem comes in. The diet plays a very important part. As we go more and more inwardly and gain self-realization, we find that our dietary habits change. And we begin to center more and more on the fruits. They are in the etheric realm. That is why nature provided fruits all the way through from morning till evening for the human body to consume. But we are not capable of living on a total fruitarian diet, let alone to live on the total plasmic energy flowing from the atmosphere through the ether into our bodies. We can't do that right now. But that is where we have to go back home. The master consciousness passes down from the eighth level all the way down to the first level. And until we can make contact with that master consciousness, we can't go beyond the fourth level. By every attempt to detach ourselves by our own volition and devotion, we can only brighten up our soul one more brilliance of a sun, and that is the brilliance of 13 suns. It's not possible to do it beyond that. It takes the grace of a master having the brilliance of 24 suns to pass through, bring us up through his light, through his radiance, and present us to the divine self. Therefore, if he says in the world, when he's in the world, that he is the light of the world, he truly is the light of the world. Because he has the brilliance of 24 suns. We don't have it. The evidence can be experienced only from within. He alone grants that experience. We say he alone grants it. Why he alone grants it? It is because we have reached a point where we are totally frustrated by our own efforts, and now are humble to accept him. When we can't do that, he doesn't grant the experience. Nutrition seems to pursue us even in that realm. Because more and more as you go into the inner realm, you begin to listen instead of watching. Listening is very important. Because the Lord in the highest realm is called the Anam, the soundless, the wordless. It has no name, it has no sound. It's all ultrasonic. And the frequencies are etheric in their nature. And the more you live on the fruit diet, the more you're capable of hearing in the ultrasonic range right within your own body. This may sound strange that you can hear in the ultrasonic ranges. But you can when you're constantly living on a fruit diet to the point where you'll be able to live now without eating. When Jesus said, man don't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, he was not only inferring of the energy that is coming into the medulla, but he was talking of the tapas, the five forces. These five forces come down from the river of paradise, flowing through us, the one great stream coming down from the divine source, breaking out into five levels, such as earth, water, fire, air, ether. And their modus operandi is based on a forward, reverse, and a neutral. You know it as the gunas. These modes of operation work through us in waves of alternating action. They radiate down from the head, down to the throat, as the etheric force, from the shoulder down to the navel as the plasmic air force, and from the navel down to the groin as the fire force, and from the groin down to the sexual organs as the water force, and from the sexual organs down to the base of the feet as the earth force. And they are moving in circles and spirals, and exactly like figure eights, up and down in ovals. Now, when this energy is pulled back up by detaching our senses from the lower realm and holding it at a point between the eyebrow, which is meant when our eyes are single, the whole body is full of light, we are now centering for the first time. And that light is the soul. The glimmer of the light is so small inside, it looks like a flame. But that flame is dual. One of its points is turned upward, another point is turned downward. And they interlock. And by interlocking, by the geometrical lines, they form a diamond inside. This diamond is known as the diamond body of the soul, which is now pure carbon, bright and brilliant, and transparent. And since the body is a carbon-based body, and we have to detach ourselves from all carbon substances, finally to refine it into the highest carbon, we have now to center it and purify it and burn out the dross. Through the constant meditation and the withdrawal and the constant fasting, but fasting on those pure distilled liquids that come from the fruit, then the consciousness is purified. Then we are able to see that radiant form within us that draws us out beyond that throat level. We have to meditate to have this experience, but only by going inward can we really experience it. We meditate, but our minds drift all over the place, and that the fundamental two lessons that we have to learn in meditation are simran, the ability to repeat, the ability to center the mind. Through repetition, we center the mind, just like twirling a rosary. That's centering the mind. Through repetition, we harness it. There is no other technique that supersedes this centering of the mind. Every way we try, our mind will wander until we learn this principle of repetition. It's by repetition we become one. Through the repetition we gain the realization. Centering the mind by a simran, or hallowing the name, another way of saying it, the mind gains self-realization. But it does not gain God-realization. God-realization is gained when the oneness is achieved through seeing the radiant form inside, seeing the light and hearing the sound current. This is God-realization. But this is granted. This is a gift. This is given or bestowed by the grace of the Master, who radiates this from within you and helps you to perceive this. We can spend a great deal of time reading, searching, but in the final summation, we have to go inside. And the amount of time spent in meditation is based on that internal observation and oneness. The real truth of how much the mind is under your control instead of your soul being under the control of your mind is how much simran or japa or hallowing the name can be done. Japa, simran, hallowing the name only means constant repetition of some thought pattern in the consciousness to harness it in order to realize yourself. Those who've seen the Hare Krishna people chant all the time, they are gaining self-realization. They are harnessing their mind. When the time comes for them to center further beyond that, they will gain the God-realization. So we can see from our own observation where we are in the process, how much simran, how much japa, how much hallowing the name we have actually done in our meditation. It is this we have to look at and observe, how much we have done in this. There is the presence, there is the only situation, the only time count that adds up in the meditation. How much have we done in 2.5 hours a day of this simran, this particular japa, this particular hallowing of the name? How much have we actually done that we can realize ourselves? The Christians, they pearl their rosaries. The Hindus, they turn their rosaries. Every individual that has followed the path has come back to start the road to self-realization by repetition. For those who follow the inner path know that this is the very first step towards realization. In order to gain that understanding, we have to center our mind and move back through that stream. We need help, but we can't do it by ourselves. But in order to get the help, we first have to make the first step towards God realization. And the first step towards God realization is self-realization. It is the path. It's not a school, it's not a church. It's the path in which you harness the mind. It's that simran that you do, it's that hallowing of the name, it's that japa that you do, night and day, it's that eternal unceasing prayer, often mentioned in your Bible, prayer unceasingly. When the mind is centered on one thought and constantly hallows it all the time, in waking, sleeping, meditating, praying, eating, and even in death, this particular hallowing process goes on all the time until you become one with it. Then God realization is achieved. The saints did not give us anything more than that. They laid down the law in a very simple way, and they have done it. We are the ones who have to do it. But it seems very difficult for us to do, because our nutritional patterns interfere. From eating a great deal of the animal kingdom, our minds have reached the point to be as restless like the animals. And that electrical nature is impressed upon our nature, so we become like them in time. For us to detach from that electrical pull, that magnetic influence, we have to go to higher forms of food. And the higher they are from the ground, and closer they are to the radiant light, the more etheric in nature and the more uplifting they become, the more transforming they become. Fruits are finally the summation in the physical substance that can be used to bring us close before we actually withdraw into the energy that is passing through the atmosphere into our bodies. But we can't live in it right away. We've grown up in an evolutionary way to absorb many substances, and our bodies are not totally ready for it. But we are heading in that direction. Self-realization is not an overnight process, let alone God realization. It takes many lives sometimes to get to that state, let alone to achieve self-realization before one can achieve God realization. We are in the process, and it's around us. All the changes that are occurring in the various cycles and ages are leading us towards a greater self-realization. The few who break through by the grace of the radiant form of the Living Master achieve in one or two lifetimes God realization. Our Master has done it, but it took him many lives of self-realization to break through to God realization. And when we meet him or see him, he does not tell us he's a Master. The moment someone declares to the world that he's an avatar or he's a Master, you can rest assured he's a representative of the Lord of creation. But he who does not attract you by miracles, or do not tell you that he's any master or teacher, and merely lives and vibrates, he's a representative of the Lord of the soul. He does not attract you by miracles. He lives the life of normal living. But only those who can see him inside, only those who can attest for his brilliance of 24 suns, beyond the fourth level of self-realization, only those can say he is a master of the Lord of the soul. And that's an experience everyone has to prove for himself. A master of the Lord of the soul will never tell you he's one. But a master of the Lord of creation will always tell you he's some avatar, some teacher, some great force. When we look inside to find the truth, only then we can know the difference. Meditation on the outer realm in the beginning stages helps us to gain some type of centering. It detaches us from our daily routine. It detaches us from certain behavior patterns, certain conflicts with the conscience and the consciousness. But until we meditate and go inside and see this meditation from within, we can't realize it. And there is a difference. There is where we have to watch our dietary patterns, because we are not concerned with the awakening of the Kundalini force. We are not concerned with miracles. We are concerned with five basic principles. The five basic principles are greed, lust, anger, attachment, ego. These five forces that bind the soul to the physical body in which the entity life exists. Until we understand that, we can't liberate ourselves from the four realms. We can't go away from water, earth, fire, air, or ether, to which the karma we are bound to. The Lord of the soul cannot accept us back. The Lord of creation will keep us here to pay that price, because we are using it. We are using earth, water, fire, air, ether to exist in creation. And his creation demands payment every inch of the way. And he traps us and ties us by greed, by anger, by lust, by attachment, by ego. Trying to awaken the Kundalini force to free ourselves would be kind of futile. It's like throwing water on the ocean to make it dry. Meditation is not just merely sitting down and losing oneself in mediumistic practices, or losing oneself in some remote region. It is a constant harnessing of that mind to make it a slave to the soul by repetition and tying it to that soul force and allowing the master's form to pull you out from this body consciousness, from the toe up to the head. The journey begins when you start to withdraw the energy from your toe up through to the head, and you can't force it. Any show of force is egoism. Any show of force of demonstration is egoism. To merely sit down and vibrate is egoism. It has to be done naturally, and sometimes you don't even it's done for you, because that is what the chant means. The doors open by themselves, and the light goes on by themselves, and the darkness goes away from you. The darkness is your ego. The darkness is your desire nature, the attachments that hold you back to this world. And the soul lights up. And when it lights up, from the outer surface, one may never know that that soul is lit up, because that's the beauty of the realization. The realization is the individual seems like any ordinary person who is totally at balance with himself. The three gunas are now working for the first time. Positive, negative, and neutral. They're all in balance for the first time. And the individual lives a normal life. Realization comes true without interruption. God realization is the pattern. From that level you see the whole total pattern of the universe as it really is, flowing out from the one central source of Anamlok, the soundless force field, coming down to the one mainstream of ether, air, fire, water, earth, and dispersing itself into the many forms around us. This dynamic movement is known as self-realization. When we look back up past that dynamic movement and see the whole pattern from the level of the radiant form, it's God-realization. God-realization occurs in us by the grace of the Master, not by any effort of ours, and we can't get it by our own effort, so we can't kill ourselves about it. It is given to us as a grace to keep us humble forever, so that we know that there is a Creator that rules and directs every act. The final summation of meditation is, we have to eat in order to live, so that we live in order not to eat. Man don't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. and this is laid out for aeons to come, for him to discover the truth about himself. It's not an overnight process, and we may do this whole thing many, many times, coming back and forth in many forms, looking for the same process. But in the end, when we gain the full God realization, we have gone through this particular principle of leaving the body, shedding the attachments to the material substances, and working through the dietary pattern back to the source. It is written or said that music is the food of the soul. The sankara is that food. And every time we are away from the sankara, we are committing the sin of the Holy Spirit. There is no other sin of the Holy Spirit than this association from the sankara. Our soul is no longer attached to the Lord when we don't hear the sankara. Every time we shed ourselves and don't hear the sankara, we are experiencing the sin of the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit is that audible life stream, and the soul must constantly hear it for it to be identified. And when it's connected by the grace of the Master to that particular force field, it can be heard all the time. The experience is something you have to experience for yourself. No one can vouch for it and make you believe it. You have to experience that for yourself. So in the final summation of meditation and nutrition, the more you live on the substances that are harvested off the ground and of the distilled nature of the liquids in it, the higher your consciousness will be to experience this radiant form. If you have any questions pertaining to what we've said and what has been said before during the entire week, we'd be glad to answer them now. Explain to me, what do I mean by living to eat and eating to live in order to live not to eat? You have to eat to live. And when you live, you have to live in such a way that you don't have to eat no more. Then you are free from the karmic debt of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Therefore, you don't violate the law of life by merely withdrawing a renunciation process. You must eat the food that has been placed in this universe by the Lord, and the body is designed for it to eat it. So you must eat it, but you must know what to eat to live. And while living by that process, in order to make the transformation from self-realization into God-realization, then the time will come, you won't have to eat to live. Your body will be nourished directly by the energy now passing through the brain. So when Jesus said, man don't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, he's telling you, you have to live to eat. In order to eat, to live, and in order to live, not to eat. Because he was fasting when he was tempted, and therefore he was living by not eating. Well, how could he live without eating and rise above the temptation of eating to live if he did not know how to live by not eating? When you know how to live by not eating, you can rise above the temptation of learning to eat to live, or living to eat. But not until that time, you can't rise above that temptation, because greed will take you back down.
Yes. Back for that temptation when Jesus said he just did it with it, just so the people would, just so they would think he was human, right? I mean, he would have to eat after that, did he?
He came down to eat to show them that he knew how to live without eating, and that this was the destiny of man. Man must eat the food that is around him, placed by the Creator, in order to evolve to the point where he does not eat to live, and then live not to eat. In that way, he would have accomplished the divine law laid out by the Creator at the onset of creation. Man must prove, by virtue of his soul, that he is an entity free in the world of creation, and learn by humility the process of involvement and withdrawal in order to be liberated. The journey begins with eating, and all the miracles recorded by men, and the constant miracles that keep being recorded, and the constant coercion is food. Every religion, their highest ceremony is centered around food. Their highest ceremony is centered around food. If you want to have the highest ceremony at a Jewish home, you have to attend Seder. The meal, the Passover meal. Yes, it is vegetarian. It was designed for that particular purpose, to help us to live without eating. Now, when Jesus was tempted on the mountain by his lower self, he did not just say, man don't live by bread alone. He did not just make that statement like that. The very first words he used were, it is written. That carries a great importance in the process. It was written that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. So if something is written, it is recorded, it is emphasized by virtue of law and principle, and by virtue of process and practice. And if we in the soul life seeking realization, not self-realization, but God-realization, must comply with the written principle. Something that has already been proven and applied and brought into manifestation. So when he said it is written, he's making a tremendous reference to a long gone, drawn up development process. Something that happened thousands and thousands of years before. That man had to come to this state. Our man must return to that state. Now, where is it written? If it's written in the Akashic records, good and fine. But how it is written, or why it is written, the important fact is it has already been written or laid down for us to return to that state. We just got to recognize it and move back towards it. Now, the Hare Krishna movement, their highest ceremony is based on food. The Buddhist, their highest ceremony is still a ritual with food. The Mohammedans, the highest ritual, is still a food. In every religion, you will find it. It's often termed consecrated food or prasadam, or prasad. It is that consecrated food that is dedicated to the soul life. And you'll never find that they will consume the animal kingdom. In fact, the highest consecrated form is still fruit. They will use a fruit. Yogananda once said, the Hindu heaven could never be complete for a Hindu soul if there were no mangoes. Now, have anybody ever eaten a mango? It tastes like divine turpentine. We can get by without it. Anytime you need salt, you have a toxic condition. And if you find that this dehydration process that comes from perspiration and the losing of the salt, your body is very toxic. And therefore, you have a craving for it. The basic salt that the body needs can be found in dulse, sea kelp, the natural seafood that grow in the ocean. The body do not need sodium chloride in the state that we have it. Fish is flesh, right? It's flesh. It's a cell life, and it's produced and carries the bones in it, which is a spine, and therefore it is cell life. It is flesh. When the creative intelligence made flesh, there are only two types of flesh: animal flesh and human flesh. And between the two types, the audible life part, which is God Self, chose one to reside in. That's human flesh, man. From in the beginning was the Word, the audible life part, at the onset of creation, from the ultrasonic range. And the Word was with God. The audible life part was in total beingness. And the Word is God. The Word is makes all the difference in the realization between self-realization and God-realization. The audible life stream is God. It's in the blood stream. The life is in the blood. Now, when you consume the blood of the creature that is toxic, you are polluting your own blood stream. You're polluting your own life stream. And if we go beyond that level, then we become cannibalistic. We have done the worst thing to ourselves. And man has reached that state at one time. There's still a lot of them around, cannibals. Now, and the Word was made flesh. That audible life stream took on self-life. Cells. But built in man, of all this cell life that we know, between the man life, or man cells, or human cells, and animal cells, between these two, it still specified which one it will stay in. It dwells in human cells. Because it dwells in human cells, to pollute it with a cell life of other animal kingdoms is to destroy the gift of creation. It's to pollute the gift of creation. Now we have a karma involving the five forces, earth, water, fire, air, ether. The marine life, where do they exist in? They exist in water. They own their entire existence to that water. Now when we take them out of the water and consume them for our personal satisfaction to survive, we have committed the karma to the water kingdom. And we have a price to pay for that. Now, when we eat the animal that walks and breathes the air and eats the substance from the earth, we have now four karmas to pay off: earth, water, fire, air. Now, when we consume a human being, we have the karma of five forces: ether, because we speak, because we think. So we have earth, water, fire, air, ether. Until we can detach ourselves by our own volition, we will achieve self-realization, but not God-realization. Then we have the presence of 13 suns. As we are, as an entity, we don't have the presence of 12 suns. By our own initiative, we can only go presence of one more sun and break through the fourth level, which is energy acting on energy. We can't go beyond that no more. We can't go beyond in any other realm. That's the story of the prodigal son. The prodigal son had to be met at the halfway mark. You can't go on your own effort beyond that. Because there is no light. And your own light cannot penetrate the darkness, because that whole frequency is sound waves. all the way up from the fourth level to the total eighth level of being, it's all sound waves. And the only light that shines there is the light of a master, because he is the father of one in beingness, and therefore he has the brilliance of the light of 24 suns. He can come down and go up from total being to matter acting on matter. So he alone can lead the way back. Yes. Light is a congealed form of sound.
So, when we come to the fourth realm and are stopped, we've reached the point where light and sound are in equilibrium.
Yes.
And we don't have what's necessary to push us through.
Right.
So, the sound is superior to the light.
Yes, it's first.
Quantity for quantity, one master who is on the other side of the figure eight outweighs several million of us who are on the light side.
Yes.
And all he does is, when the whole equilibrium of the universe is right for it, he picks the one who's most worthy.
Yes.
Pulls him through.
Yes.
One more master,
right,
to balance out so many other souls,
right,
who just came into that part of creation at, I guess, all different levels, straight out of the sunshine.
Quite true. You have spoken exactly how it works. One at a time. It's called the turnstile of the spirit. The different types of masters. Masters of the Lord of the soul and masters of the Lord of creation. You can always tell who are the masters of the Lord of creation. It's very hard to find the masters of the Lord of the soul.
Masters of the Lord of creation will be highly psychic.
They will tell you that they have the power. They will tell you that they represent some great force being. They will tell you, they will make the declaration themselves that they are an avatar from their own lips. Now, we don't condemn them. The seeker of truth does not condemn the master who makes those statements. He's just more aware of those who are not aware and are caught in their force field. We're simply vouching for ourselves from the inner experience, the difference between the two types. And where are we going? If we are going to be entertained by the masters of the Lord of creation, we shouldn't worry about that, because that's what we chose. But if we want to go back home to the Lord of the soul, then the master who represents the Lord of the soul will reveal himself within you. And you will know that within yourself, and you will go back home.
But yet, if we make the choice, that's egotism. And it's an act of creation.
Consciousness by his existence and by virtue of those around who infer of his life. And if you feel a tug from within your conscience to the genuineness of his existence, this is the bond between the master and the student. When the student is ready, the master is there. It is when you feel the bond that tugs you from within to his genuineness, you have fulfilled the condition of the master having chosen you. It is that what is called the bond between the student and the master. You must feel that pull. And then to vouch for that pull as being genuine for you. Because he has to live. He can't show by coercion or by outward demonstration or cover you on the head and make you accept it. But he comes within the range of your existence, either by a book or by some comment or by some friend or individual. And when you decide to check this genuineness from within, and feel a pull. And that pull tugs you to the identification that he has fulfilled his role. Yes?
Can you say something about, you're saying that awesome mind, you know, will take you to the same place no matter what you repeat, you know, if you're hallowing, truly hallowing your name, that, you know, it's all the same. So how does that correlate with choosing the master or having a master?
You don't choose the master.
Having a master, you choose, you know, how does, you know, the names that one master gives or another.
When you hear of the name of an individual, and if you want to check the veracity or the genuineness of his existence from the inner realm, and there is a pull within your consciousness to do it, then that bond is established. Until that time, there is no bond. You may meet many individuals, and you may want to check the bond of it that exists. But if that bond doesn't satisfy you from inside, there is no bond. They come within the orbit of your consciousness, and you are brought within the orbit of their magnetism. And until you check it out inside, to have a bond, a pull, some experience from inside, he is not the individual for your soul. You must have an experience with him from inside. And as you have this experience from inside of you, you know now, there is your bond, there is that connection. Yes. Where do we live as human beings? Do we live in an atmosphere or an atmosphere? While you're thinking about it, I'll just ask you. Where do we live? In the atmosphere or the atmosphere? We live in the atmosphere, right? Not an atmosphere. So if we live in the atmosphere, then it's called the abode of God. It's the eternal self, the eternal abode. Sat. Khan means abode. The board of the eternal self, the eternal Godhead. So we live there. We have to break through the various levels in this particular abode. And the various levels in this abode are matter acting on matter, energy acting on matter, consciousness acting on matter. Energy acting on energy. Consciousness acting on energy. Consciousness acting on consciousness. Beingness acting on consciousness. And beingness acting on beingness. These are the eight levels. They have Sanskrit names for them. But in the final summation, in this atmosphere, this is where we live. We are drawn up by the grace of a being who has the full flow from matter acting on matter to beingness acting on beingness. Yes?
I remember being told that there are that electrons are placed in an atom, one of eight general energy lines out from the nucleus, and that these eight levels are subdivided.
The electron is not involved in it. The Lord of the soul is beyond the electron. The Lord of creation is within the electron. The Lord of the soul is beyond the electron. He's pure being. There is no electron in him. You see, the electron is used to measure time. The distance light crosses the width of an electron is a unit of time, and that's the law of creation in motion. So there is no electron in the law of the soul. Only in the law of creation we have the electron, and it's measured in the distance that light crosses the width of it. That gives us a time cycle. That's why it's called kal.
Then verbally, we're right now at the cross between the light and the matter.
That's where you are. Right now, we are only at matter acting on matter.
No, what I was trying to say is this. I've been trying to define something by saying what it is, or what it's like. As long as you can do that, you're talking about creation. When you reach the crossover point, then you can only define by saying what it is.
Right. So there you have the Hindu philosophy, neti, 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 not Brahm. Not God, not God, not truth. When you leave thinking, you enter Zen. Therefore the Zen Buddhist says, Zen begins when thinking ends. When the mind seems to cease to define what creation is for its first time, then soul beingness begins to occur. But it's similar to say, like a Buddha says, all is nirvana too. And we jump to the conclusion, everything is nothingness. That's what they term nirvana. That's why they say the Buddhistic teaching is nihilistic or very atheistic. No personality to relate to. But out of the void, which is total sound in an ultrasonic way, this particular beingness occurs. The beingness is ultrasonic.
It's what holds the atom together.
Yes.
So you can either hold it together or you can require it. That's your choice.
All right. But we cannot intellectualize on the beingness. There's no way. We can only experience the beingness. Because we'll be using our mind to relate to the soul. And there is no way you can do that. The mind is a tool of the soul. And the soul must have the experience of being lifted out of matter or the crystallized form of energy into the soundless range of pure energy, where there is no light.
So you use karma to get yourself out of karma.
Yes.
By setting up the light sound of 3 and 6 and 2 million.
Therefore, the best karma you have is seva. You know, that devotional service is the liberating karma. It's the only true karma. When one performs service to the Lord, every action is the Lord's joy, or joy for the Lord, or living for the Lord through action, seva. This is the liberating karma. It's neither good nor bad. It's that particular action that liberates. It liberates you from the oppositional pull of your mind. It liberates you from the desire and the craving for manifesting the ego and the personality. Yes. They are para beyond. They are beyond desires now. They're beyond all type of subtle desires. And their consciousness is filled with that. But they still have to move on to that fifth realm where consciousness is acting on energy. That's why those who have arrived at that state are called Maharaj. Maha means the great and royal. The royal greatness of the fifth realm, the royal crown, the diamond body. The diamond body is the point between the eyebrows, where the two lights are fused in as one. The other form and the radiant form of that being. You have a radiant form too. And the radiant form of the spiritual master is there within. And when the two radiant forms are merged, we have now what is called the diamond body. Last night we were drawing the diagram of the diamond body, the geometrical patterns, how they fuse. So the master consciousness opens up your consciousness for you by grace. Yes?
These forms that you see within, you said what realm they come from. What happens when you see something with your eyes that are open?
Keep repeating the holy name. And if it's a genuine experience, after 5 minutes of repetition, it will reveal itself to you. If it's not, it'll go away.
What
it'll be a hallucination.
What level is it from? What realm is it from?
It's not important.
Oh.
The important thing is to find out if it's a genuine experience or it's a hallucination. If it's genuine, it will remain and reveal itself to you. It will teach you. It will show you what realm it comes from. If it's not, it'll go away after 5 minutes of repeating the holy name. This is the evidence you have for testing all the time on every level. Don't take nothing for granted, because this is not a take it for granted universe or a something for nothing universe. It is something for something.
So sounds too should be
checked. Right. Therefore, the songs you want to hear are the songs of the bee, the songs of the ocean, song of the conch, the song of the drum, song of the bells, songs of the harp, songs of the trumpet, or flute, thunderclap, bagpipes, drum. And everybody's got their own drum beat to march to. So the poet knew this from within. We will experience all these particular sounds, but these are the ones you're looking for. Now, when they combine, they make the symphony or music of the spirit. You have to check it out. And the only way you can check it out again, you have to take a song that you repeat over and over mentally to check it out once and for all. In other words, if people on the outer realm seem to be very finicky in detail, inside, you got to be ultra finicky in detail. You can't trust your shadow inside there. So we develop an extra sensitivity for detail in there, which can reflect in our outer life too. So the more you're conscious, the more disciplined you become. And that extra discipline of being aware of what's going on inside and not taking it for granted, it's not going to bring us God realization. It's going to give us self-realization, which is, like my father used to say, half a loaf is better than no loaf. We
you can't get God realization, you might as well settle for self realization. But you want to get God realization, so stick with it. Is it clear? Out in your mind as to what it's all about. There is always going to be a seesaw or conflict between your conscience and your consciousness. And that is a tug of war between the Lord of the soul and the Lord of creation. The Lord of creation stimulates your consciousness. The Lord of the soul pacifies your conscience. Therefore you know, beyond all doubt, I am God. Be thou still and know that I am God. That the I am principle of the primal energy within you is the God. Is that conscious self. Not consciousness, but conscience. When we eliminate all the terminology and boil it down to what is really happening inside, it's the confrontation between consciousness and conscience. And conscience is God-realization, and consciousness is self-realization. So when somebody says you're going to attain cosmic consciousness by following me, watch out. He's only selling you self-realization. He's not sending you any further than that. If God realization is your conscience, it's a total alignment with it. And that's a very difficult thing to recognize because we don't want to face our conscience. Conscience brings pain. And only by living with the conscience can we face pain and rise above pain. But consciousness brings pacification and tranquility, evasion, delusion, and before you know it, we will avoid pain. And when we avoid pain, we are in a state of hallucination. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to pursue the path of God realization, because it's a very narrow way. It's like the razor's edge. It's full of aggravation, harassment, and sometimes honoriness. Sometimes you see a person who is truly working at it can be the most honorary individual to hang around or be nearby, simply because he's trying to break those patterns that tend to pull his conscience down. Consciousness will evade, it will subterfuge itself, but not conscience. So if we see the individual who is trying to tell us of this divine state and claiming that he's coming from some great source and was given the authority by that great source to lead you back, that is the Lord of creation working through his soul force. When those don't tell you anything and lead you back by virtue of love, by virtue of the proximity of their magnetism, without miracles, then you know your conscience would have the inner experience. And then you'll find most people flip, because they realize they have found a difference between the two. And they want to tell the world, but they're not supposed to tell the world either. Because then they will be showing off. We have no right to force the individual to accept the Lord of the soul by coercive methods. We must accept him strictly from within our own conscience.
I want Jesus after his video.
Yes. If we speak of it, then we are showing off, we are manipulating. When we don't talk of it, we are attracting by love, by the pure conscience. And those who see you before and after wonder as to what you are doing. If they are sincerely seeking and they eat prasadam, that is prasad from your house, they will be open in their heart to question your way of life. How come you don't like your T-bone steaks no more? So if you say my mangoes are better than your T-bone steaks, then you will find that they are getting inquisitive. And as long as they eat some prasadam, this divine consecrated food, their consciousness will be lifted up from the gross nature to the most subtle etheric nature. And their conscience will begin to work on them. Not their consciousness, it's their conscience. It starts to work on them as to the reality and the genuineness of the procedure. They will start to weigh the things in their consciousness, and then they will begin to live it. A high and a low consciousness is fluctuation. So great masters or saints will tell you it goes like this all the time, up and down in your consciousness. But conscience is direct, straight. It's all the time like the spinal cord flowing in your spine. And the high and lows would be like the two serpents around the caduceus. You ever seen the winged caduceus? The symbol that they use for medicine? The highs and lows are like two snakes swirling around. The staff is straight up and down. That's your conscience. Now, the wings on the caduceus are not on the heads of the snake. You take a good look and you see that the wings are on the head of the staff. So, flight into God realization is a pure conscience and not a fluctuating consciousness like the two snakes. Now, the sound current is on your right side of the brain and the light currents are on the left side of the brain. Therefore, when you meditate, you want to hear the sound currents on the right side of the brain. That's why in the scriptures he says he sits on the right side of the Father. The Son, the audible life stream that comes down, the Word made flesh, a living master in the world, is a living sound current. By virtue of his magnetism through darshan, he pulls you up to the right side of the life stream, the conscience, settled in the middle of the brain, but he pulls you up by the right side and sets you there. So when we see a living master, we are simply seeing for the first time the audible life stream emblazoned to its maximum in flesh. He has the brilliance of 24 suns. We have to vouch for this by going inside to see it. His brilliance is so bright, we cannot comprehend it. By virtue of our soul nature, we only have the brilliance of 12 suns. And by virtue of our own self-practice, through detachment, renunciation, good deeds, we can only achieve the brilliance of 13 suns, one extra sun. We can't go any further than that, because none can come unto the Father but by me. We will need now 11 more suns, brilliance, which only a realized man has. A true God-realized man has 24. Self-realized man only got 13. And if we are not self-realized, we only got 12. So by virtue of the quanta of light determines what level of spirituality we're in. Therefore, we are lifted up by the grace of a God-realized master through his radiance. He acts as a filter in front of us through the sun field. By the luminosity of his light, we perceive these levels in the sun field. We are too impure to see fully with our eyes these levels of purity. Therefore, by grace, we are permitted to get a glimpse of the creative force field inside. And it takes us up to that point where we can look at it for a brief moment and come down and know at what station of life we are in. Then we have to work ourselves up by discipline. In my Father's house there are many mansions. If it were not so, I would tell you, I go to prepare a place for you. To what level your conscious nature can perceive within the luminosity of the Master's radiant form as he pulls you up between the 8 levels, that degree of conscious control is where you will go if you can work out the karma in this one lifetime and hold on to that conscious control. And you know you're going there and you have to stay there. To go the full length of it and full total control in a conscious level and come back and live in the body, then you know you may be liable to be called another master. Now, in the case of Peter, when he looked at his own master, Jesus, he was able to pull himself to the point where he said, "Thou art Christ." Then Jesus said, "Who do men say that I am?" By asking them to perceive from their inner vision. Many said he was a prophet, great teacher. Through the inner perception of Peter, he said, "Thou art Christ." He didn't say, "Thou art the Christ." He didn't say, "Thou art the Son of God." "Thou art Christ. Thou art in that state. Thou art in that master state of the radiant light." Then he said to Peter, "Upon this rock, upon this concrete experience of your conscious control within yourself, I will build a church. I will build some type of a relationship with the Spirit." So when we get that concrete experience in our conscience, and that's where the solidity is, in the conscience, it's not in the consciousness. We can only be solid, we can only be confident, we can only be totally embellished in the faith by our conscience, not by our consciousness. And when we have that, it's concrete, it's like a stone. It's solid. On that we can build. We can build from that experience. And then we can hold on to what level that light permits us to see within the 8 levels where we would be by virtue of working out the karma. Then we will take on the responsibility of working out the karma in the physical frame. But not until we have some experience within to see the concreteness of it, or to know to what level on a conscious state we can be, we will fluctuate back and forth. We have to have a concrete experience to say, "I know to what level it's possible for me to hold on to with my soul nature and my conscience when I work out my karma, where I will be in the 8 levels." Now, in the case of Paul, he was up in a certain heaven, a certain part of those 8 levels. By virtue of his consciousness to hold on, he was there. The sadhus are capable of holding on to the second level on a conscious control. That's why they're called sadhus, meaning the great renunciates. They are capable of holding on to the second level, that energy acting on matter under total conscious control with their conscience. Their conscience is completely in alliance and control of energy acting on matter all the time. As we become conscious and maintain the conscience on each level within the radiant light of that form, we are becoming God realized. But we first have to achieve self-realization in order to experience God realization. God realization is entirely different to self-realization. It is that level where you, on a conscious relationship with your conscience, can hold on to the light granted to see by the Master's grace, where in the eighth level you can stay and work out the karma alone in the physical body. We have karma all the time, but if the physical body is supposed to surrender itself at a certain time, then by virtue, how can we work it out, and where would we be in our conscience in that life stream? We need the help of the radiant form of that realized master to show us where we would be in conscience when we look inside. Now, if I am locked up in matter acting on matter, and in this incarnation, by virtue of my karma, I can only go as far as consciousness acting on matter by the grace extended by the teacher for me to see in that light, then how much my conscience is able to hold on and work from that level of consciousness acting on matter, there is the place mentioned by the Master Jesus, I go unto the Father, I prepare a place for you. If it was not so, I would tell you. Because your conscience is going to bug you. Not your consciousness, your conscience. You're going to feel left out by that teacher if he never give you an actual experience to see what level you are to make in this life stream, in this particular body pattern of working out the karma, so that you know where you are in your group. As you meditate and do your simran and try to hear the sankhans and see the light, this experience is yours for the asking. Master can do the work for you, but he can reveal to your conscience, by virtue of your effort to overcome your karma, to what level you will be in those realms, and by how many incarnations it would be necessary for you to work out the final summation of God realization. So if a master says, I take you, and in three or four incarnations, you make the whole grade, the whole shooting match, he has to show you inside too, to where you are, that you can fit it. Yes?
I think the masters say that if you are initiated by one of them, you'll go back in no more than five lifetimes. That means that you can start out at the lowest level, they're acting on that.
Yes. Right. Because it is written, I do not visit the sins on the father more than the fourth generation. Which goes another way, I visit the sins of the father unto the third and fourth generation. Fourth generation is the last. Yeah.
Do the masters say that within five lifetimes, or do the disciples say this?
No, masters.
The masters say this?
The saints make the statement. They are the saints. They have the full, total picture of God realization, the brilliance of 24 suns, total purity in the eight levels. And they can, by virtue of the grace, tell you, when you are in contact with them, in conscience, how many lifespans. And five is usually the maximum. Why? Because we are governed by the tattvas, the five forces. And he will make all the amendments and adjustments within his own life stream to correct the karma of the those five forces, which we ourselves may not be able to correct on a conscious level. But he will not remove the karma. He will adjust the weight, the impact, the time cycle for confrontation for the karma. But you have to live the karma. That's why you sow and reap what you sow. But by virtue of the grace, the weight is lessened, adjusted, or prolonged to ameliorate any condition that is coming. And therefore you can handle it better by that situation or commitment. You can handle your karma a whole lot. Don't be like me, pray to get rid of it all at one time. And when I got it, I found out it's not a good way to get rid of it either.
Did you succeed?
No. You don't remove all your karma by praying for it all at one time because your body can't take it. You can only take so much. And by virtue of that, grace again comes from the masters who are in that realm to grant you the extension of your life. They know you mean well. They know you want to perform cosmic suicide, which is called martyrdom by the layman. But don't attempt it. It's not a practical way out. Yes? If you run too much current through a resistor, you destroy it. Yes, we are capable of calling down a too high a vibration through our physical frame, which is designed as a resistance against the life force.
So we throw ourselves out of the body.
We do throw ourselves out of the body.
And lose the opportunity to work it out.
That is exactly true. But by virtue of your good karma, and by virtue of your guardian angel,
don't forget
many factors come into play.
Yeah.
Right. There is an adjustment, there is an amendment, a modification.
It can handle an overload.
It can handle an overload.
And feed it through us at a constant high
rate. Right. Now, there are different types of capacitors, too. There is the electrolytic, and there is the non-electrolytic. Now, the electrolytic capacitor is the living master. By virtue of his grace. The ordinary capacitor or condenser that is not electrolytic is the sheepdog. That means that individual is connected to a living master while the living master is in the body. And he, by virtue of his love for the master, can pull you along. Until you got sufficient love for the master yourself. Do you follow it now? Until the individual can have sufficient love for a living master, he needs the encouragement of another individual who has that love for that living master to encourage him on. Otherwise, we don't have the love for a living master. It's very difficult to love a living person in terms of the God realization. Because we cannot see God realization in humanity. We expect it to be outside of humanity in terms of an impersonal behavior, in terms of power, control, and domination. But the subtle function of love in a human form, which is a personal Godhead, is most difficult and sometimes very, very hard for the conscience to accept. Therefore, we need encouragement. But we can't be pushed into it too fast, otherwise we ruin we ruin that love. If we're carried away by fanatism, that's not the true love either. That's show. That's emotionalism. The true love is the constancy and taking up the daily routine and relating all efforts to that being in the flesh as the source and comfort of your routine. Then you are getting the true understanding from your conscience as to why that being exists. He alone, from within, can grant you the experience of his totality of the light, which is 24 suns. And you see for yourself and you know. Now, when he pulls you into his orbit, you are lifted up. When he pulls you into his orbit, you are lifted up.
Has the correlation attaching yourself to the master is like putting his capacitance into your circuit to raise your vibration?
Very, very, very true. Verily, verily, I say unto you, unless you have a master to hook you up by the point of contact in that area of your body, you don't have no current going through you.
So until you are hooked to this master, you are an incomplete circuit and cannot function at these resonances.
Very, very true.
Also, I'm familiar with three gross large divisions in Sat-Mat and also in the energy I have studied, such as you have tended the physical world, Brahman, and in Sat-Dash, you're spiritual. And also, you have in the energies I was speaking of, you have your gross particular movement particles, then you have your electronic chemistry levels, which are your electronic forces and things, and then you have another quantum jump into your nuclear vibrations, which is the essence of these elements. Does this correlation hold?
To some extent, not completely. Not something. The five forces that hold the universe are flowing over every manifestation and through each manifestation. That's what makes the difference. It's flowing through it and over it. You ever see how many messages are carried on a wire across on a telephone? It's one wire, but they can carry many messages across it. Do you understand the principle of how messages are sent across the wire, one single wire?
If it's done at different frequencies.
If it's done at different frequencies.
Different carrier
waves. At one frequency, you have a certain relationship with the master. At another frequency, you have another relationship with the master. So according to how you make the resonant change in your conscience, not your consciousness. Therefore, a master, when he answers your questions, may give you the most ridiculous answer to your consciousness, merely to resonate your conscience. But when that resonance occurs in your conscience, then that frequency will pull you further up with him. Once I was fortunate to see Master Charan Singh, and the only question at the time was asked in the room by him, are you getting the books? And my reply was, yes, Master. He looks around the room for 10, 15 minutes. He looks back to me and says, are you getting the books? And I said, yes, Master. 10, 15 minutes passed again. He looked around. Are you getting the books? Okay. I said, yes, Master. today I couldn't say that. It's very difficult to get those books because of the shipping conditions in India.
Mm.
But we're hoping to be able to happen. But to see the Master foresaw this a long time, the difficulty. The resonant frequency of what was happening in conscience would make it impossible at the time to realize that these things would pop up. Yet more and more the books will be coming and people will be reading it as to what truth is. But how many are going to live it? That's the next question that may come up. Living it is one, reading it is another.
Also, so there's a, something that's a conflict to me, and this is, to the extent I can see part of it, free will versus free choice. Now I can see how that fits in, but such things as I hear prophecies made that this and this is going to happen now. You say there's predestiny, and then again, I hear that, well, this is determined because of this, and so that it's possible, say, that the consciousness of the people may change and prevent a catastrophe. I hear this, being said. Now,
are you sure if their consciousness will change or their conscience will change?
I'm unclear on that.
When you make a decision within yourself for a change to something constructive, was your consciousness that did it or your conscience that did it? Your consciousness did it?
The decision was made by the consciousness after, quote, consulting the conscience.
The conscience made it. Not the consciousness. The consciousness merely acted out the command given by conscience. So when society's conscience changes, then their consciousness will be lifted up. But not until that time. Every man has to change his conscience, not his consciousness, for him to grow up. And that's the hardest thing to do.
Can a man change his conscience?
He can change his conscience by the confrontation of the problems that come up in his consciousness. Otherwise his conscience will keep up a certain pattern, resisting and evading, till it decides that it's going to make the choice and act it out.
It requires his stress.
Right. Harassment of one's conscience is growth. All these things come to pass, but not to stay. And faith is a substance of things hoped for, not seen. And you only gain faith in yourself by calm expectation through living in your conscience. You don't gain it by excitement. When the consciousness is hot and fluctuating, it can't gain the control. It gains it when it's calm, relaxed. Therefore, the conscience seems to gain power or confidence. It confides in itself for the first time.